The evening from this point on will be a different nature. Perhaps the same political stripe. Perhaps not. But the rest of the evening, Ad L'Or Boker, for those who will be staying for Mishmar, will be the Leil Limud, the Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah. It's great. It's really very much an honor and a pleasure. Rav Moshe is a dear friend of mine, personally, a chavruta of mine going back many years. Also, many people don't know, but if you check the archives, you know, we save these things because one day the Bezrat Hashem they'll be writing doctorates about the about Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi, and they'll be looking in the archives, you know, the early brochures and the like, and they'll see Rav Moshe Lichtenstein listed as a faculty member in Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi, in the faculty for Machshavat Yisrael. So very much as a you know, things have come somewhat full circle, but in terms of the sharing a vision, you know, one of the in many ways we're very proud to see ourselves as being one of to paraphrase, I guess, Haratzion uvnoteha, that the influence that the yeshiva has, Yeshivat HaRetzion, has had on Eretz Tzvi, has been tremendous, not only in the personal Hakarat HaTov that I have, having been a Talmud there for 7 years, but just the overall impact it's had on many of the Ramim who are themselves Talmidim, as well as on the overall philosophy of the yeshiva. So it is very much with great honor and pleasure to give you Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivat HaRetzion.
So good evening. I felt at home enough to take off my jacket as a faculty member, and I still have a key to the faculty room if you ever want to come pick it up.
We've changed the back.
The topic I'm going to address tonight, or actually which I was requested to address, is that of leadership, which caused a problem, and I'm a few months too early because given the nature of the evening and the person who's at the focus of it, I should also speak about a more important topic, and Mordechai and Esther. So Ma'inyan, Mordechai v'Esther, the Sukkot, yes, the answer is none, but I think it's very relevant, as I'll make clear later on. It is very relevant to Friar and the whole generation that he represents, and therefore, even though it's not Purim, try to store in your memory and use it Purim time again. But since it's even Talmud Torah and throughout the leadership, I would like really to go and move to address the issue of the Megillat Esther and the leadership drama over there. I'll start with a very simple question. It's called Megillat Esther, as we all know. Of course, one could ask, why Esther? Why not Mordechai? It's why are men always discriminated against, and why not call it Megillat Mordechai? He's a major figure. If not for Esther, there's no Geula. If not for Mordechai, there's no Geula. Nevertheless, the credit is registered in Esther's name, not in Mordechai's name. And of course, I can answer that in a moment, because it's really not our decision to the pasuk in the Megillah. The pasuk says at the conclusion, Perek Tet Pasuk Chaf Tet, Vatichtov Esther Makabat Avichayil Mordechai Yed Kol Tokef. So Esther seems to be the one who's leading, Vatichtov Esther Malka, but of course it mentions Mordechai Yudi. And to a certain degree, both Esther and Mordechai, of course, are responsible for the events. And she nevertheless given prominence, which Chazal then translated to a famous Gemara Megillah of Zayin, This says that Esther sent a request or a demand to Chachamim. Shalcha Esther Chachamim kva'uni ledorot, and then later on kitvuni ledorot. This Esther sent a letter, a request to Chachamim, record me for generations, kitvuni ledorot. Of course, kitvuni, not kitvut Mordechai, but kitvuni. So you can say already the Tanakh and Chazal basically attribute the Megillah to Esther. That, of course, only takes the question a step backwards. So why does the Megillah, or the Gemara and Megillah, why do they consider the Megillah to be Esther's Megillah and not Mordechai's Megillah? To answer this already, we need a longer analysis of the events and the drama that's taking place in the Megillah. I'll begin by focusing upon the leadership issue. Eventually, we have to discuss the nature of Purim and Yom Tovim in general, but we'll try to remain focused on leadership. So we have, of course, the opening scene of the Megillah, in which Achashverosh meets a new queen, etc., etc. And then we come to Perek Bet, in which the Jewish element is introduced, or Mordechai and Esther. Ish Yehudiyah B'Shushan HaBirah Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shmi ben Kish Ishimini. Shoglam Yushalayim Agosho Gleta Im Yechonya Melech Yehuda Shoglam Vuchadnetza Melech Bavel. You have Ish Yehudi, it's a famous pasuk, of course, Ish Yehudi in Shushan, Mordechai with his whole lineage, and he belongs to the generation that was exiled from Yerushalayim. Shoglam Yerushalayim. He left Yerushalayim with the first wave of people who were expelled by the Babylonians. And there he is in Shushan, raising Esther, etc. And now, then the pasuk introduces Esther. Of course, already a major element of Mordechai's identity is the fact that he's a figure who grew up in one place and is then raising a family, taking a role of leadership someplace else. But definitely he's a transitional figure. And what's more important, the formative influences in his life are A, Yerushalayim, B, if we want, the Galut, Shehu Glam Yerushalayim. Mordechai is clearly identified with Yerushalayim. Now, when Bnei Israel are exiled to Yerushalayim, from Yerushalayim to Bavel, this creates a tremendous crisis. And I'll just preface by adding an additional question, I will discuss this briefly but not really go into it. Why is Purim a day which we celebrate for generations? We could, of course, say because Jews were rescued. However, I assume, or at least presume, that this is not the only episode of Jewish history in which Jews were threatened, their survival, their lives were at stake, and nevertheless, because Baruch Hu came and delivered them and rescued them, and there are various episodes, of course, different communities over the generations celebrated private episodes, but is there anything unique about Purim except the claim that it was a system-wide, if you want, the threat. In other words, what was threatened was not a local community or a country, but the entire Jewish people. And of course, post-Babylonia, Jews were scattered in different places. There was always a concentration. The Jews in North Africa, there were Jews in Northern France. There were Jews in Iraq. There were Jews in Tehran. There were Jews in Hungary. And so there was never the threat that everyone was looking in the same place. And therefore, maybe this indeed was the only threat to everyone together, all located more or less in the same place. And maybe all we celebrate is the survival. Or maybe it's something more deep, it's something different. In other words, it's not only physical survival, which we are celebrating, but it's a watershed event, not only because we were rescued. And so before that happens more than once in history. If you want to present the question from a more Talmudic point of view, the Gemara says in Masechet Rosh Hashanah and Masechet Tanis that Batla Megillat Ta'anit. To translate that into a broader explanation, there was a collection of days of commemoration, celebration during the time of Bayit Sheni, during the Second Temple, in which various threats, Jews were rescued, various days of moment in which something good happened, and these were celebrated and commemorated. There was no tachnun, there was no tanz tzibur, there was no espedim. The Gemara says, time of the Churban, these were all nullified. We turned a new page in history, the slate was wiped clean, all of these days were void and no longer, they're no longer in existence. Of course, none of us celebrate anymore Yud Aleph Adar or all these other days which I mentioned there. However, except for Chanukah and Purim, Chanukah and Purim remain in effect even post Churban. And that, of course, raised the obvious question: if history has indeed moved forward and we are no longer in the same period, and we, so to speak, we've traveled back to the point of zero and now moved forward, why do Chanukah and Purim remain in effect? And the basic answer in a nutshell is that there's a tremendous crisis at the Churban. Or the covenant which Kadosh Baruch Hu basically created with Am Yisrael and Mitzrayim was a threat of violation. Essentially, Galus Churban created a dual crisis. Or maybe one crisis with dual reasons or background. First of all, being expelled, can mean that God no longer wants you. He's turned the relationship. If you look through Tanakh carefully, not in Megillas Esther, if you go through Nevi'im Achronim, the Nevi'im are waging a constant battle because no one believes that there really will be a Galus. No one really believes they're going to exile. People believe this will be better or worse. The geopolitical situation in Israel will improve or deteriorate. Things can be, we can be better off, we can be worse off. If you know, to put it differently, the Sefer Shoftim model. Take the model Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim tells us constantly that when Jews are positive and they're following God's footsteps, so things are good. When Jews begin to stray off the path, so he says all kinds of goyim, situation deteriorates, and this is roller coaster up and down. Detail begins like a shoftim, and it's the paradigm through which Jews for hundreds of years viewed history. And when Nevi'im Achronim come and say this whole paradigm is about to be overturned, and that you think that, that you've always been Israel, just go up and down, it's not so. It's the idea of Churban, of Galus, meaning that you leave the country, you can be expelled, and the Beis HaMikdash can be destroyed. It's not believed. No one thinks it's just, no one considers a credible threat. From Hosea through Yirmiyahu, there's this constant, almost shrill attempt to convince them that's for real. Take for instance Yirmiyahu. Go to Shiloh and take a look what's going on in Shiloh, because Shiloh is destroyed and you think your Yerushalayim is different, you're mistaken, and but they won't believe it. And it begins with Hosea already. They really don't believe this will happen, and when it happens, therefore there's shock and there's of course tragedy and death, but the shock is maybe God has really terminated the covenant. Because the covenant exists, if he expelled us, he no longer wants us, to put it in the Chazal's phrase, Eved Shemecher Rabo. If you sell a slave down the river, he's gone. There's no relationship. If God is our master, and he no longer wants us to be his servants, he no longer wants us to be in his abode and serve him, apparently it's over. That's crisis number one. Now they come to Galut. So originally, that's the crisis. However, stage B, they come to a society which is accepting of them. Originally, the first wave, they're captives, they've been conquered, they're not integrated into society. So it's simply the fact, maybe God's got rid of them and left them to chance. Now coincidence rules, there's no more hashgacha. Once they arrive in Megillas Esther, They're members of society. A nice Jewish girl can become a princess. So her identity is concealed for tactical, strategic purposes. But you don't get the impression that Achashverosh would have necessarily disqualified her if he knew she was Jewish. It's just, Mordechai is not interested. But even if I assume she couldn't become a princess, assuming. But it's clear that's a cosmopolitan society. Mordechai is clearly Ish Yehudi. He's roaming Shar HaMelech. He's in the court. He's a political figure. He's involved in the local politics. Chazal go out and describe a whole scene in which Jews are welcome. La'asot kitzon ish va'ish. So Chazal tell us, if you get kosher food, Achashverosh is mishtot. You go to the mishteh, which was, I would say, treifel mahadi in terms of the hedonism, in terms of the pleasure seeking, in terms of the emptiness, but kosher food, you get glad kosher. Kitzon ish va'ish. Achashverosh is accepting of all nationalities. It's a very cosmopolitan society. And Jews feel at home. You have the idea, communities identify as Jewish communities. You have the fact that there's such a thorn in Haman's side just proves how comfortable they feel in the country. And this creates a whole new crisis. Begins the assumption, well, maybe Torah was relevant in the old country, came to Israel hundreds of years ago, it's just Mitzrayim, this kind of backwater country with pagan goyim. The Torah describes as being morally corrupt, religiously primitive. So over there, Torah was a huge advance, it was relevant, it was meaningful. But now we're in a cosmopolitan society, we're in a place which is commerce from all over the world. Cultures intersect. Over here, you no longer need Torah. In other words, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Torah, the relationship was fine and good in the old country once upon a time. But now, in this Paras, which is an empire, it's not some small country between Hare Yehuda and the sea. It's not between Ashkelon and Hadera. Now you're talking about a magnificent empire. Powerful, cosmopolitan, full of cultures. Over here, we don't need Torah. It's no longer relevant in the new world, in the technologically advanced world. You can manage without Torah. This creates a new crisis of identity. Not only have you been expelled in the previous generation, but now also it seems it's no longer necessary and no longer relevant. And this, in a sense, is the point which Jews are in Shushan. They're questioning, should they assimilate into Persian society, become Persians, with maybe some kind of vague ethnic identity, but no more than that? Or should they remain Torah true Jews? Should they remain faithful to Torah, to the value system, even in Paras? Is Torah eternal? Is it relevant to any place and time, under any political circumstances? Or is Torah meaningful only in the old country, in the Canaan of once upon a time, not in the new advanced culture? And here we get a difference of perspective between Mordechai and Esther. Ishu diabish shana bira. Mordechai is a proud Jew, identified as such. Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Ishimini. Shushana Bira, in the epicenter of Persia, in the capital, he's identified as a Jew. He's an Ishudi. He has a Yiddish look. He dresses like a Jew. He behaves like a Jew. He doesn't conceal anything, and he has deep roots. Asher uglav Yerushalayim, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, Ishimini. He goes back generations. His lineage is established. He has a masoret, a tradition. He's rooted, in a word. And then he's gone through the exile, but his roots are not only by his forefathers, not only in terms of people, but also in terms of place. His locality is Yerushalayim. He's an Ish Yerushalayim. few years ago, I was together with my wife on the Shabbos in Memphis. We met there, met some person there, and he's been living in Memphis for 40 years. My wife says to me, "Who you shall me?" There's no. So we asked him. Of course, he was in the Lechi. He did the Chazon Ish. He came in 1954, but 45 years later, you could sniff him out and say, "Yushalmi," on the spot, within a minute or so. And that's Mordechai. Ish Yemini Asher Glam Yushalayim. He's constantly in Yushalayim. And he's living and breathing the world of Yushalayim. Vayihi Omeret Hadasa. He's trying to raise Esther. Already she has a dual identity. Hadasa hi Esther. She has a dual identity, which already tells us something. She's here, she's there. She's Persian, she's Jewish. She has Esther or she has Hadassah. But it's more important, ki ein la av va'ein. She's rootless. From a literary perspective, unless someone has no roots, he has no parents. She's coming from nowhere. She's coming out of the air, so to speak. Ein la av va'ein. So of course she was born, but the thing is, there's no impact, there's no influence. She doesn't represent her parents. She's rootless, adrift in a world, in a new world. And then this meeting here of Mordechai and Esther. Vahir Me'at Hadassa, he's trying to raise her and to create a Jewish, to instill a Jewish identity in her, to create a tradition. But she there is wandering, rootless. She's left Yerushalayim. So these two figures. One, if you want, rooted in the past. One who's clearly identified. And you have one who has no roots. She doesn't come from Yerushalayim. She's simply born locally. She's not Ishimini. She's not Ishayimanit. She's not from Yerushalayim. She's from Shushan Habira. And after this introduction, when crisis ensues and Haman wants to destroy the Jews, so we have there, in a sense, the following problem. Mordechai, he knows his values are clear to him. When Haman goes out and says, "You know, I'm out to get the Jews," Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh. His values are firm. He, you know, his compass is direct. He knows what he wants. He has no doubts. Unlike everybody else, who it's partially a threat, partially, of course, it's a lack of identity. Mordechai's identity is clear on the one hand, and that's why Haman wants to destroy all the Jews, because he knows that Mordechai's identity, he represents Jewishness. And you have Esther, and Esther is to be at a loss. And initially, she doesn't know what's going on. Later on, she sends Hatach to find out what's going on. But the cross still Hatach, but it's El Mordechai, Ladat Mazeh, Vial Mazeh. You can read the Psukim in one of two ways. Factually, she didn't know what's going on. She was perplexed by Mordechai all of a sudden dressing up in a sackcloth. Of course, a deeper level, Ladat Mazeh Val Mazeh, she can't understand his stubbornness. She may have known Haman's decree, but why in the world are you so fighting it? Why in the world are you so insistent? Ladat Mazeh Val Mazeh, meaning what's going through your mind? Why are you so insistent? Why are you putting up such a fight? Lo nara, you know, better maybe that there should be such a decree, but we can live with it. Ladat mazev al mazev. She doesn't want to see what's going on. And Mordechai, of course, goes and explains to her what's going on. And what's the response? And this is the pivotal point of the Megillah. When Mordechai says to her, go to the king and tell him to save the Jews. Mordechai tells us to go represent the Jewish people. What's the response? Kol avdei ha-melech ve'am medinot ha-melech yodim shekol ish ve'isha shevol ha-melech achatzer pnimit shekirei chadato la'amit. local custom, Persian norms prevent me. In other words, the question here is, do Jewish needs or Persian norms dictate your identity? When the two clash, the need to save Jews, the need to represent Jews, or the need to conform to the local norms and customs, Persian political correctness, what do you choose? And what she says is, Kol avdei melech, all those goyim, ve'am medinot ha-melech, and all these nationalities and ethnic identities, everyone is melting pot, becomes a Persian. Etc. I can't defy the Persian etiquette, the Persian diplomatic norms, and therefore I can't go. In other words, she chooses Persia over Yerushalayim. And Mordechai brings things to a head. And he goes and says to her, Vayomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther, etc. Ki Machareish Tachish Beit Hazot Revach Vatzavut Yimukom Acher Vat Beit Avich Toveidu. You have to choose between Jewish existence, between Jewish identity, and Persian identity. If you choose Jewish identity, for generations you'll be remembered. If you choose Persian identity, at Ubeit Avich, where's Beit Avich? She ain't la'av ha'em. Where's Beit Avich coming from? Mordechai is essentially appealing to her roots. Do you have roots or do you not? Are you really rootless? Are you really drifting here in the present with no past? Or do you have a past? Does the concept Beit Avich, does that relate to you or is it meaningless to you? And when he said, and this is the pivotal turning point, because essentially the drama of the Megillah is first and foremost not a political drama, it's a spiritual drama. This is what I meant before when I asked, what's the thing about Purim? On one level, there's the political drama. And it may indeed be more of an event than other such episodes in later history. However, what makes it an event for generations is not the political element, because that would be nullified at the Churban with the rest of Gilas Tanis. What makes Purim and Chanukah, but that's a topic for a different evening, what makes Purim a crucial event, relevant for generations upon generations, is the spiritual drama. It's, as I said before, it's a question of the relevance of Torah and Jewish identity. Can Jewish identity exist in Galut? Or does Jewish identity have to be forfeited in Galut? Because sooner or later, the local norms and customs, religious, social, political, cultural, sooner or later will clash with Jewish identity. And without the Beit Avich. Sooner or later, you always have to choose between Beit Avich and Kol Avdei HaMelech V'am Medinot HaMelech. And this is the real crucial battle, the struggle. And now, to go back to Mordechai and Esther. As seems to be clear, Mordechai knows from the beginning, from the get-go, Mordechai knows where he is. In that regard, there's no drama. Mordechai is a character with no change. He doesn't evolve, or certainly there's no turnaround, there's no dramatic change. Mordechai remains where he was. He develops, maybe he evolves somewhat, but he's essentially in the course which he began the Megillah at. Esther is the one in which the struggle is taking place. To put it differently, Mordechai is the Jew who came from one society to another, to a cosmopolitan society. He came with Skapata, he came with Ishtraimo, he speaks Hebrew or Yiddish, whatever it is. He goes back to the old country, to the Alter Haim, and he's clear, there's only one problem. He doesn't fit in. But Mordechai can't inspire the young generation. He doesn't represent them. He's come from a different place. You know, their struggles aren't his struggles. His identity has been forged already in Yerushalayim. He goes back. He can live out his life as a proud Jew. As a Jew, maybe he's being persecuted by Haman. but the spiritual struggle is not taking place in his soul. For him, it's a political battle of persecution, of survival, of threat of death, but there's no real dilemma culturally. Esther is the reverse. Politically, she can escape. No one's going to harm her in Ahasuerus' palace. But the real question is, what will be her identity? And she represents the young generation, the one that doesn't, that looks upon the old country as the relic of the past, and say not necessarily relevant to their contemporary lives. And this is where the real drama is taking place. And therefore, Mordechai does two things when he hears about Haman's decree. One is, according to the Medrash, he gathers Tinokos Shabbos Rabba. And I indeed believe, had Esther said no to Mordechai, Mordechai and his inner circle would have survived. In other words, he wouldn't have been threatened by assimilation. He would have been threatened by persecution. Because Baruch, we can trust him that he would have had a minority remain and continue, either in Persia or someplace else, continue the story of Jewish existence. But for that generation, and for every subsequent generation which faces similar dilemmas, the real struggle is in Esther's soul, her contemporaries. Esther's most successful. She's advanced the furthest. She's literally in the palace. So she represents everyone, but she represents an entire generation. A generation who's asking themselves, when the crisis is forced upon them, a decision. Up to this point, La'asot kitzon ish va'ish, you can get away with both. You can eat kosher and be in the palace. But now you have to choose. Is it? It's either Yiddishkeit or Persian existence and assimilation. And it's here, and they're rootless. Can Mordechai somehow influence Esther and awaken within her the sense of Beit Avich, the sense of the Jewish past? Or is this a lost generation? This is the real drama. And when Esther hears Mordechai a second time, and she says, "Lech k'tosut kol ha'yudim," what she's saying is, I've thrown my lot in with Jewish identity. Lech k'tosut kol ha'yudim, this is the pivotal point in which she has basically affirmed her Jewish identity, even at the expense, achei navol amech shelo chadat. I will defy Persian norms in order to affirm my Jewishness. And this is what makes the Megillah, this is the crucial point, what makes Purim relevant for all generations. The choice of Torah and Jewish identity, even in Galut, even in the Galut in which you're accepted as an equal. Okay, and then, now from there on, and I won't go into this in a moment, there's a clear transition. My father spoke this often in the yeshiva. Esther, up to this point, Mordechai is active, Esther is passive. She takes orders from Mordechai. From this point on, it's reversed. She gives the orders, Mordechai is the one on the receiving end of her commands, of her directives, etc. The crucial point, though, here is, one, Esther is the one who represents the real inner struggle of the Megillah. Now, when we go back to what we began with, I'll go back to the Gemara Megillah that I mentioned before. Shechalem Esther Chachamim, Kisvuni Ledorus, record my story for generations. Make the drama of my choice known to Jews throughout Jewish history. So what they tell her, Shalchula, the response was, now Chachamim presumably in Yerushalayim, no, not clear. Anyway, what was the response? Shalchula, Halo katavti lach shileshim. It's an old story. It's been told many a time. Three different times it's been told already. Meaning the story of Amalek. Which means what they saw was the political struggle of destroying, of killing, murdering Jews. So they said, okay, it's an important story, but nothing new. Nothing, there's no added value. We know this from the first Amalek, from the second Amalek, from the third Amalek. Nothing new over here. To which she responds, Atchim Atzula Mikra Ketuba Torah Ketuzot Zikon Basefer. Okay, etc. What's going on over here? They don't initially understand her. What's he telling them? I know the story of Amalek has been written. I'm well aware this is not the first threat to Jewish survival. That's not my claim. This is the first drama in Galut of affirming Jewish identity. This is the first generation facing in Galut a society which is willing to accept it, to accept Jews. This is the first time in Galut that the dilemma of the relevance of our Judaism, of our Torah, is at stake. It's a brand new story. It's a story of Jewish identity in Galut. It's never been told before, because by Yosef, maybe on an individual level, it's never been told because it never happened before. Up to now, from Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're at Israel. The story is a new story, and you don't appreciate it because you are Chachmei Sanhedrin. You are Mordechai Jews, deeply rooted in Torah, deeply rooted in the Yeshiva, deeply rooted in the world of old. You are Anshei Yerushalayim who came with the good of Yechoniya. You have deep roots. How can you appreciate my struggle? How can you understand who I am with no roots? You don't begin to understand my story to appreciate it. And that's why initially they're blind and oblivious to her need. Until at Sheirat and Nahem, until they realize it's a whole new drama. When she made herself, when she made the point clear, and when they realized, so then of course, they decide to establish a Yom Tov. And to establish a day of commemoration throughout generations. Because this is the archetypal question of the Jewish existence in the cosmopolitan society accepting of Jews. And it's been played out ever since Esther time and time again. And if it's relevant throughout time, if you go back now to the end of Megillah, I'll skip towards the end. ותכתוב אסתר מכה בת אביחיל ומרדכי יהודי את כל תוקף. This is what I mentioned before. She writes and she records the story for future generations. Notice Esther Malkah Bat Avichayil. All of a sudden she has a father. All of a sudden she has roots. She had, I mean, biologically she had a father before, but she wasn't connected. She's reconnecting after the change, after the drama of Lech Knos, when he said Beit Avich Tovedu. It's no longer Ein La'ava'im. Mordechai never could have saved the Jews there. Mordechai could have saved a small group. But to save the vast majority of Jews in Shushan, you needed an Esther figure. Connected to the contemporary generation. Relevant. Up to date. Feeling at home in the local culture. Not feeling a foreigner, an alien, a stranger, a greenhorn. Someone who feels at home and successful, and wildly successful. Only she can motivate everyone else from the leadership position to proclaim their Jewishness in such a society. I said before, this drama has been played out often in Jewish history. At times, there have been issues of persecution. That's a whole different story. Leadership in times of persecution. But many times Jewish history, be it Spain, the 11th century, be it many other times and places, where Jews were accepted and were seen as part of society. And the same dilemma faced them, what to do. And no more so the United States of the 20th century. If ever there was a society accepting of Jews, open to them, willing to basically allow a Jew to live as free and as comfortable as possible, it's 20th century United States, where Jews go around nowadays and demand Little League on Sunday and on Shabbos because you feel you own the country, you feel in the driver's seat, you no longer feel that every small thing is a favor. I can't describe to at least the younger generation here, my grandparents, Aleihem Shalom, they came to the United States during World War II. The sense of not really being the driver's seat, the sense of not only of gratitude, but also, if you want, being a guest almost, or a gever toshav, was always there, even though they voted and they knew that, and they had a much better appreciation of the freedom than someone who grew up in the United States because they grew up in other cultures. But there's always a sense of insecurity. My wife's grandfather grew up in Poland and came to Israel. Till his last day, he kept cash at home, a significant amount of cash. Because it was a Jewish instinct. You always felt the need to get up and run away. In other words, he felt that a Jew always will have the ability on a dime to get up and disappear. I couldn't ever relate to it. You know, how many money's tied up in the banks or whatever. But he felt UD because he grew up in Poland. And to appreciate the United States, someone grew up now and with a sense of Jewish entitlement in the States, you realize what an open and accepting society. And dafka this cause, not necessarily in 2011, but in 1911 and onwards, created the exact same dilemmas and the exact same threat. It was a tremendous threat, the sense that, yes, Judaism belonged to the past, that the old generation came and went to Shul and Shabbos and woke up the young generation to go work because this is the old, this is the Mordechai Yehudi, Asher Glam Yerushalayim, or Huglami Polin, Lita, Rusa, whatever it was, as opposed to the Ein La'av Va'em. And the entire generation or more faced this trial, faced this experience, and this transition from the past, from a society which we see this backwards and old and Yiddish, to cosmopolitan, technologically, political, powerful empire, was a tremendous threat. And this was the story of Esther, which is extremely relevant in 20th century Jewish existence in the United States. And I'll say the following. Many, many, many people were unable to make Esther's choices. Maybe they lacked the Mordechai figure to be there at the time to give them directive. Maybe they lacked someone like Mordechai. Whatever the reasons are, or put it differently, it's a very strong pull. Esther herself was almost pulled into this vacuum. Almost, she almost disappears down this hole of Persian identity. And many lesser figures, that's what happened. Put it differently, assimilation is a tremendous threat. And each and every member of the generation who was able to come and say to himself, it's either Kol Avdei HaMelech V'am Bnot HaMelech, or it's Atu Beit Avich, or Atau Beit Avicha, faced the same challenge of Kidun L'Dorot. I think, and if I talk about leadership, it's not only leadership, political leadership. I'm talking here about leadership in the home, in the family, educational leadership. Educational leadership begins at home. It's not necessarily a person who has an institution with thousands of students. It's every parent, every father, every mother in the home are faced with the challenge of leadership in an age of transition in which, if you're the younger generation, your choice is not so evident to you. If you have children who they're the younger generation, their choice is not so evident to you. And this is, to me, the greatness of all those people able to preserve Yiddishkeit, Jewish identity, Jewish religion, who are able to return to their roots and to recognize that what the United States has to offer, at the end of the day, we will always be faced with this dilemma of Atu Beit Avich, as opposed to Kol Avdei HaMelech V'am Bnot HaMelech. And at times, person say to himself, if I can do both, wonderful. And if not, what's my basic identity? What's my basic choice? The entire generation was faced with this. The reason that all of us are standing and sitting here at this moment is because all those people who knew to make the Esther choice and to reaffirm their identity despite the pull and the allure and the temptation of everything that modernity and the secular society had to offer. And for type of leadership, that seems to me the most basic leadership. The drama of the Megillah is essentially an inner drama, first and foremost. Once Esther convinces herself, it's easy to convince others. Convincing yourself is the difficult part. and I think it's true of the person whose memory is being commemorated this evening, and many other contemporaries who all face the same dilemma, made that choice. And it's bizchut Esther that we commemorate Purim every year throughout v'zichram l'suf mizaram, and it's in the zchut of Mr. Fryer and many such other people that we all are able to continue Jewish identity and Jewish existence and to have the self-conference I mentioned before, because they were able to establish Jewish identity in a foreign land. We're able to come and not forfeit at Beit Avich, even though they were in a paras umadai. And to put it differently, at the end of the Megillah, V'ayudim kichtavam v'chilshonam. Lashon means a culture, not only a language, but being able to establish Jewish culture in a foreign land, have the confidence to do that, we are able to continue Jewish existence, history, tradition, and Torah throughout. And therefore, I think that is why I call it real leadership. And regardless of you lead a person, a family, you're a paradigm of your generation, you're the leader of everyone, or you're just one amongst many. This is the kind of leadership, and that I feel humbled. And I grew up in a family, which you know where it's going, I grew up in a family of Mordechais. It's the definitely Esthers who I really think are the ones who we owe the state of Jewish existence in the United States at the moment. And to them all I can say is, Kol HaKavod V'Tichtov Esther Malkah. All her successes to our future generations, they write the Megillah of Jewish existence to we also in them. Chag Sameach.